you with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Game on.
Hola, jugador nación. Bienvenido a Comienza el Juego. Mi nombre es Brian, y conmigo todos los días como hoy es mi buen amigo y Taco Bell especial, Andy. And anything wrong with that comes to you courtesy of Google Translate.
I had no idea you had your own SAP setting. That's amazing. I
just... Yeah, I'm pretty damn cool that way.
Brian, how are you?
I'm great, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm just fan-diddly-tastic.
Fan-diddly-tastic? Have we all recovered from the week of chaos that was?
I think so. There's still probably a few unmentionables in the mail heading towards Texas, but, you know, hopefully it'll get lost and we won't have to worry about it.
Right. the big box expansion is headed that way, huh?
It is indeed.
Well, sir, what the heck are we going to talk about today?
Well, I'm glad you asked me. Today's topic is, this is what it is. We've all run across them at one time or another, or sat at a table with them, or had them kibitz a game, or just generally fallen in with the wrong crowd. Well, we're here to help Gamer Nation. Just what is it you do about bad players?
You shoot them all.
Exactly.
Yes. With nuclear bullets. Just boom! Little
nuclear bullets.
Yeah. Wham!
Upkeep phase.
It's been chaos around the D20 Radio Network this week, in case you didn't notice. So we aren't entirely certain what's been updated and what hasn't.
GM Dave and GM Chris, the jokesters that they are, have posted one or two shows this past week, depending on when you chose to download things. But mostly they've been sowing so much chaos that they haven't had time to do anything useful. Ha! Take that.
Yeah, take it, take it, take it. Oh, now I'm all... Never mind. meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast and Mostly Joe have put episode 10 up, in which Joe speaks with David Pulver. David is one of the guys behind Big Eyes Small Mouth and GURPS 4th Edition RPGs. Together, he and Joe talk about being a bit more than human and a little less than a god. Yep, it's transhumans. Listen in and get a free copy of Mjolnir. Or not.
I can't even say that.
Thor's hand. That's why I didn't give it to you.
Oh. I always called him Mjolnir, so.
Yeah. Thor's hammer.
Thor's hammer. Oh, wonderful. Stop. Hammer time.
Do, 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 do. Oh.
Halt. Hammer's height. You can check out both these shows and several more over at www.d20radio.com. Head on over and check out the new homepage GM Dave has put up and click all the shiny, happy little buttons and things. Who knows? You might even find your way into the community forums and have a chat with all your favorite show hosts.
Bits and pieces.
News time. Woohoo! Exciting! And stuff. Anyway, here are the latest bits and pieces from around the gaming world.
Good. Yeah. Bards and Sages announces the release of two new micro-adventures for D20 Open Game License games, A Matter of Honor and A Stealthy Thief.
Isn't that an old-time bookstore, Bards and Sages?
Wow.
I had to throw that in there.
Yeah, that's great.
Take that.
Don't know what I'm doing now. I'm totally lost. I'm still trying to work out old-timey book cards and say, huh? I don't get it. Where's my helmet?
Once again.
I need my helmet. So every GM has been in this predicament. One of the players is running late, and nobody wants to start the main quest without him. But nobody wants to sit around waiting. It's times like this when you need a filler to keep the players entertained, and that's exactly what these micro-adventures are for. Both supplements include encounters scaled for different levels, so that you can use these micro-adventures for parties from level 1 to level 8 with minimal effort. After that, you have to do them twice. Everything you need is included. Background information on the region, some local lore to add depth and make the adventures feel organic to your own setting, monster and NPC stats, and even pre-generated treasure. The +1 toothpick of eye gouging.
Oh, I love that.
And wand of summon MILF. A Matter of Honor can be run in 30 minutes or less. It's perfect for those points when the party is traveling by land from one location to another, and you need a quick encounter to break up the travel. A Stealthy Thief can be run in 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the encounter selected for the party, and can serve as not only a filler adventure, but as the impetus to get a group together to launch a new campaign in the first place. Both supplements are only 99... Actually, they're, according to the way this is written, Gamer Nation... Both supplements are only 0.99 cents each. That's 99 hundredths of a cent each.
Awesome. That means I can buy a bunch of them for a buck.
You could buy a bunch for a penny. And they are available at rpgnow.com.
I hate it when I'm impetus.
I want to make the joke, but I shouldn't. So I'm not going to. All hail Viagra's.
Yes.
He's a real stand-up guy.
Yeah, they didn't know that one was coming, did they?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Oh, I love this guy's name. Michael. I can't even pronounce it.
Shocked. 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 Michael.
Who names these people? My goodness. Michael Shocked.
Wait till you get to the next bit.
Oh, great. Anyway, that guy, Zuloretto, the 2008 Spiel des Jahres, German Game of the Year, winner is coming to the iPhone and iPod Touch in April 2009, courtesy of Spin Bottle Games. I think I've played one of their games.
Yeah.
In Zuloretto, players attempt to stock their zoos with a wide variety of animals in order to offer visitors a good viewing experience. Take in too many animals, however, and you'll lose points due to them being cooped up in the barn with no place to display them. The digital version of Zuloretto lets you play against the computer or against up to 4 players, although you need to pass the device around in order to do so. A roller blind lets you track the holdings and other players' zoos. The graphic design provides 3D views of the zoos, well, that was hard to say, as well as animated animals that make noises. Tiny male and female symbols mark the fertile animals in your pens. Head over to www.spinmodelgames.com and check it out.
So you found 3D views of the zoos, hard to say, and yet did not at all stumble over animated animals?
Well, you know, I was getting up to speed there.
Oh, okay. You had to take a run up on it, huh?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
I tripped over the view.
Uh-huh. Man, what a week.
Howarda.
Yeah. Robot Viking has been doing some speculating on what D&D's new setting will be for 2010. We already know they're doing Eberron for 4E this year, but what about next? Check out a presentation of the evidence at www.robotviking.com and get ready for Dark Sun?
Isn't that kind of an oxymoron? Dark Sun, sun being bright, dark being the opposite of bright. Sun, dark. Okay.
Oh wait, let me contemplate your logical difficulties there.
Oh. Jerk. Oh, you put in my drink. We've barely scratched the surface here.
If not enough, whatever it was.
Stories or want to see what else is out there, check out three awesome resources. www.boardgamenews.com, www.gamingreport.com, and of course the aforementioned www.robotviking.com.
I only mentioned it twice.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics, something with majority control and mass marketing, min-maxing that'll make people want to run away in fear not playing anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say?
Gamer Nation, the last thing you want to do is be caught off guard when you start talking about games. Listen carefully, and maybe you'll be able to tell a riposte from a coulée en garde.
Yeah, I'll let that one go.
You have no choice.
My creme coulée.
Oh, dear.
Wasn't even funny. Sorry. Sportsmanship. Noun. Conduct and attitude considered as befitting participants in sports, especially fair play, courtesy, striving spirit, and grace in losing. Also, fairness in following the rules of the game.
Gamesmanship. Noun. The use in a sport or game of aggressive, often dubious tactics, such as psychological intimidation or disruption of concentration, to gain an advantage over one's opponent. Also, the use of dubious, although not technically illegal, methods to win a game. And now, on with the show. Well, goodness me, Gamer Nation. Have you ever sat down at a table with a bunch of people to play a game, and only to discover that one of those people is not fit for public consumption? I know Andy and I have.
Yeah. One of these things is not like the other. Yeah, and frequently, sometimes, we sat down with that person.
Yes, we did it over and over for a while there, because either we're gluttons for punishment, or we're just dumb.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with one of those.
Excellent. So, what do we do about these people that really... You know, you think they're okay when you start out, but as it turns out, as things go along, you discover that this person has certain little habits or idiosyncrasies or qualities about them that make it difficult to enjoy whatever game it is you're playing with them. How do you take care of that? What should you be doing to fix that situation?
Well, you know, beating them about the head and shoulders comes to mind first, but, you know, it's usually a poor outcome, so.
Yeah, and of course, there's, you know, like I said at the top of the show, you could shoot them. You could.
Well, you could, yeah. But then there's the mess to clean up afterwards. You've got to get rid of the body, and
yeah.
You know, there's
and the arrests and the jail time.
Yeah, the repercussions and the legal.
I've discovered it's really hard to get new games while you're in jail.
Well, none that I want to play, anyways.
Right. Hide the Sausage is not a board game. Take that as written. It's not a board game. Neither is the 8-man drop the soap competition. Okay, so assuming you don't have the urge to be called baby cakes, and, you know, never mind. I'll just get off that subject altogether there. That's that way disaster lies. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, so we have, in our experience, come across a number of annoying, bad, evil, possibly, you know, just generally horrible people to play games with. And one of the first things that comes to mind when we talk about this, and we've kind of covered a little bit of this in a previous show, but one of the things that comes to mind is the player who cheats. Not because they particularly don't play the game well or they particularly lack social skills. They just cheat because they find it to be, I don't know, the kind of thing that they want to do all the time, you know? If I can get one over on everybody else playing the game, then I've won the game even more.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, it's a sad state of affairs when you've got to do something like that to play the game. Even if you're not winning, you know, cheating just to try and catch up or, you know, put somebody else off, it's pointless. That's probably one of the things that irritates me more than anything else as far as bad gaming habits is cheating. You know, regardless of what your thoughts behind it are, what the outcome might be, it's pointless.
Yes. We've played with an individual who we rapidly discovered you did not want to have handling the money in any game you ever played with them. I would make it a point to hand the stack of bills to Andy just so that this guy wasn't anywhere near them.
Yeah.
Because what you would discover as you went through was that there wasn't ever quite as much money in the bank as it ever seemed there should be. And there was quite a bit more money in his pile than it seemed like there should be.
Yeah, regardless of how well or how poor he was doing, so.
Yeah, and this is the really stupid form of cheating where it takes about 2 seconds to realize what's going on, and it's really, really obvious. Because you're in last place and you've got more money than I do? How does that happen?
Yeah.
You know? And by the same token, you didn't want to let him handle any important bits in the game at all. I mean, he was just about to be trusted with handling his own pawn or cubes or whatever it was, and that was about it. You didn't want him responsible for any of the other resources or anything else in the game, because things would mysteriously be just a little bit off the whole time.
Yeah, and whenever it came to counting up scores or anything like that, it seems like there was always some sort of padding going on somewhere. It's a game, kids. Play it, have fun. If you win, great. If you lose, no big deal.
Yeah. And there are, of course, other kinds of cheating. We've talked about, like, the dice rolling cheat. And we've talked about the guy who maybe moves a couple more spaces than it really seems like he ought to be able to. Things where, you know, their numbers don't quite add up when it comes time to, like, check out character sheets or things like that. So I guess the overall question here is, what do you do with a cheater? How do we fix that problem or make that problem go away, as the case may be?
Well, I guess the easiest thing to do is call them on it. Maybe not the easiest thing to do, but probably, I don't know, the most forthcoming thing to do is just call them on it. And you don't have to do it in front of everybody and embarrass them, but, you know, pull them aside and say, hey, what's up?
Yeah, although I do have to say that if you've pulled this person aside a couple of different times and you've said, hey, look, things aren't adding up like they're supposed to, or it doesn't seem like you maybe, you know, you try to be diplomatic about it. It doesn't seem like maybe you're quite following the rules that were given or anything like that. If you've done that a couple of times, you've pulled them aside, and eventually it becomes obvious that if this person continues, that method is not working. So you have to resort to the second, far ruder, far more intense and personal method, which is to call them on it right in front of everybody else.
Yeah, calling them a tubby bitch usually helps too.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is, if a person isn't going to respond to the very nice, very polite approach where you talk to them away from everybody else, and it continues to be a problem, well, then I guess your ultimate and final solution is just don't invite this person back, or make it very clear that this person is not welcome back.
Yeah, and that's, unfortunately, that's happened in our groups before, and it got to the point to where this one particular person, everybody was calling him on it. I mean, you know, and constantly.
Yeah, be like four or five trips out with people taking this guy to the one side. Hey, look, I know what you're doing over there. Knock it off. This isn't helping the game any. You know, and it's like, okay. After a while of that, it gets kind of old, kind of boring, and you know you're not going to be enjoying the game if they're involved in it because of what they're doing. So you kick them loose. You just have to say, all right, hey, You know, we gave you a bunch of chances. Thanks for coming. Don't bother coming back.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if it's a 6 or 7 year old kid, yeah, I can understand giving a few extra chances and getting the point across of not cheating in sportsmanship and things like that. But when it's an adult who's, you know, even a year or two older than I am, for heaven's sakes, come on.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've seen full-grown adults who just, it doesn't matter what game you're playing, they cheat every single time that they can get away with it. It's ridiculous. It's kind of sad, kind of pathetic. There's something more behind it than just, you know, I enjoy cheating. There has to be if you've gotten that old and are still doing it.
Right.
But by no means are you, as a game group, required to help that person deal with whatever their actual motivations are. I mean, you're not psychotherapist, unless, of course, you are a psychotherapist, and then, you know, good luck to you.
Well, the thing that makes it frustrating, especially for us, is as difficult as it can be sometimes to get game nights set up and get people together, and if that person's been a part of, you know, several gaming sessions, to lose one person can be detrimental to especially a campaign or something. But when it comes down to something as serious as that can turn into, I just assume not have them there.
Right. On the whole, your game is going to be much more pleasant if everybody's playing by the same rules. And it's going to be more fun to play and fair for everybody that way. And that's really the point of playing the game, is to have fun and be fair, if at all possible.
Right.
Our next problem player is the player who doesn't necessarily cheat or anything like that, but he's playing in a manner that is what we like to call not in the spirit of the game. And this is a little bit hard to explain, but just because the rules don't say you can't do something does not necessarily mean you can do something. Does that make any sense to you, Andy?
In a roundabout sort of way, it does. And that's this to me comes back to the term that we like to stick on people that we call rules lawyers. And they will look for every loophole that they can find to exploit gameplay. They will look for everything to shoot down your plays and boost up theirs, regardless of whether it is, like you say, in the spirit of the game. It comes down to the thing of it's almost like cheating to me, but it's not really. But it's just one of those things where people will sit there and just futz with everything that they can. They'll draw the game out longer than it needs to be. They'll argue over rules. You know, you can show them the book, hand it to them, and they'll say, "No, that's not what it says." And well, yeah, it's right here in black and white. So.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a game, D&D 3.5, that we were playing over at your shop at one point. Where one of our players decided that she was going to cast some sort of protective spell or something over herself as a reaction to some attack that was made against her. I can't remember exactly what the scenario was. And I was GMing, and I said, okay, fine, that'll go off in initiative 5 of the next round. And the argument commenced.
Yeah, and it was a lengthy argument, as I recall.
Right, and I tried to be very diplomatic about it and very nice and say, look, I appreciate that's what you want to do, and there's certainly nothing preventing you from doing that, but this is the way it works. And I was, you know, as nice as I can possibly be, which some people will argue is not terribly nice most of the time, but, I was very nice about it at the time, and it finally got to the point where I said, look, here we go. I opened up the book. I showed her the passage, the section that explained the timing on the thing. And then I looked at her and said, now, I'm tired of playing. Because you have absolutely worn me out with this argument. So we're going to stop. And next week, if you want to come to the table with a much more helpful, pleasant, enjoyable attitude, great. We'll pick up the game from here. If not, that's great too, because then I won't have to have this argument again.
Right. And it just completely shot the game right in the foot, because it stopped right there and then. There was no going forward from that point. You said, I'm done. And, you know, that killed everybody else's game.
Yep.
Because one person couldn't accept the ruling of the GM, who is in control of the game. Now, she doesn't have to agree with you, but she should go along with your ruling. Now, this is not to say that you could not have been wrong, but we know that you are right because we all went through and checked the ruling on it. The fact of the matter is, she felt that she needed to vindicate herself in proving that she was right and, you know, started this argument with you and, you know, deteriorated the game into nothing.
Yeah, and she had the same books I did, had read the same stuff, you know, all that kind of thing. Picked her own spells. It wasn't a surprise how everything worked and all that stuff. And it just, it, you know, it's an unwritten rule that really should be written down somewhere, I guess, for some people, that you do not argue the rules in the middle of the game.
Yeah, that's always been a big problem in a lot of the miniatures games, especially with, like, Warhammer. Now, normally, when we ran a tournament, we would have at least one person wandering around who would have access to a rule book and who could make rulings on certain questions like that. And they've done that over the years, even at the big grand tournaments for Games Workshop. But the thing that I have found is, you know, if it's something simple, just, you know, roll a die on it. High wins, low loses. You play the game out. At the end of the game, you find out what the actual outcome for that specific rule is. Don't bog down the gameplay just for the sake of being right. That's something that really annoys me.
Right. And because of that experience and several others along the line, I now begin each new role-playing session, each new campaign or whatever, by explaining very carefully how I like my games to run. And one of the things I say is, I'm fully prepared to be wrong, but not in the middle of the game. If we're playing the game, you take the rules as they are. And then afterwards, if you want to talk about it or you think I did something wrong or whatever, I'll be perfectly happy to discuss the rule with you or why I ruled that way or whatever it was. And if there's something that caused a major error, like maybe your character died or, you know, you had something taken from you that shouldn't have been or whatever, then we can correct that the next session if we need to. But don't stop the game in the middle with a stupid rules argument.
Yeah, and there was more than one person that used to frequent my store that it just got to the point where nobody would play a game with them because they were so dead set in being correct about their interpretation of the rules and, you know, making sure that they came out on top. They had to win every game that they played. I don't want to play with that person.
Yeah. And this is a little bit away from not in the spirit of the game. This is like handling rules lawyers and whatnot. But not in the spirit of the game kind of encompasses the same thing. In other words, when you've played a game or you're getting into a game, as you go through the game, you will begin to see how the game was designed and how the designer's intent was for this game to proceed. And it's generally fairly obvious what things are within the spirit of the game design and what things are not. And yeah, okay, maybe the designer didn't think of this particular scenario or this particular situation, or the playtesting didn't reveal this hole in the rules or whatever. But perhaps this is not the way the game was meant to be played. And I have an example that actually works for this. There's a game called Masons, which is a game about laying down walls around these little cities and then placing resources and whatnot on either side of the wall. And depending on what you control and where you control it and what scorecards you have in your hand, you get points based on how things are placed. It is possible to play this game in such a way that it enters a deadlock state. People alternate turns placing walls and resources. And if you happen to get it into your head that you and maybe somebody else want to place walls all the way around the edge of the play area, you can grind the game to a dead stop in about 12 turns. Because it becomes impossible for anybody else to play. You cannot play inside walls that are already completed. If you complete a wall all the way around the board, you can't play inside it. You've wasted half the board. Your game's over, and nobody will have won.
Right.
That's clearly against the spirit of the game, but nothing in the rules prevents you from doing that. So that's the kind of thing you want to avoid. And I have met people who look for that kind of stuff. They want to find the way to break the game and whatever little rule hitch they can find or hole that they can find, they'll use it. It's not the way the game was intended to be played. It's not fun for anybody else. It's not any kind of an equal competition or anything like that, but people seem to enjoy that. So if you have somebody who does that consistently, again, about the only thing you can really do is take them aside and say, hey, look, you're ruining it for people. Okay? Not everybody wants to find the hole. Some people just want to play the game and have fun. And you're making it impossible for them to do that. And again, I guess a three strikes you're out rule is probably the best way to go with it. It's just like, you know, if I have to tell you the same thing three times, clearly you're not getting the message. So clearly I don't need to play with you anymore.
Yeah, because it really becomes old hat to, you know, meet up for your game night or, you know, to go down to your friendly local game store and try and get a game in with somebody. And to have that person waiting in the wings, just waiting to swoop down and, you know, knock your pieces off the board and jump up and down like a 5-year-old, it's, you know, there's no point to it. So, yeah, by just leaving them out of the loop, yeah, you're better off for it. But always give that person a chance, you know, 2 or 3 if they need it. But like you say, 3 strikes and I'm pretty much going to just not want to play with you anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, admittedly, sometimes these guys are really good at the games, and they've played the games enough that they've found all these little loopholes and whatnot. But that doesn't mean it's fun for anybody. And it may be that they don't even realize that they're not making it fun, that nobody's really intrigued with this rules loophole that they found, you know, and really wants to see it put in action in the game we're playing right now. You know, tell me that kind of stuff later if that's the kind of person you are. You know, explain to me how this rule didn't cover this and this, and look what you could do. And that might be amusing. But don't try to implement it in the middle of the game I'm trying to either learn or have fun with.
Yeah, especially if you're trying to learn a game, if you've never played it before, if you know, maybe you only played it once or twice and you're still figuring out the mechanics of the game and what's a good way to approach the game and play it. If you're going up against somebody who's played the game 100 times and has figured out all the little intricacies of it, yeah, they'll probably shut you down pretty quick, but then what fun is it? You know, I'm not going to come back and play against you again because you know, not necessarily because you trounced me so bad. I don't mind losing a game, but I don't like having my face rubbed in it and being, you know, just have somebody be blatant about it.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes down to our next problem, which is attitude. Sometimes you meet a really nice person who's very, very friendly and seems like he'd be a good person to play the game with. But as soon as he grabs hold of the dice, or the little tanks, or the meeples, he turns into this monster. This is the monster that, you know, secretly lives in all of us, but we've somehow managed to control it and got it under, you know, under thumb. The one that has to win. All the time. In every game.
Right.
And while winning has the worst game manners of anybody you've ever seen. They act like every move is as if handed down from God himself. And that it's your fault for not being as good as they are. And when they're not winning, they're about 4 times worse. Oh, you guys suck. Oh, the dice aren't rolling for me. Oh, this, oh, that, oh, that, you know, excuses, 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 excuses. They just can't suck it up and realize it's not their day to win. You know? Or they accuse everybody else at the table of cheating, or of having it out for them, or of targeting them, or any number of other things that just make the whole experience absolutely miserable. If you happen to win a game against this person, they will make you feel terrible, awful. About 3 inches tall for having beat them. Well, you know, it's been a really bad week, and I'm off my game, and, you know, I wrecked my car the other day, and my sister's been sick, and my dog puked in my shoes, and all this other stuff, and that's why I didn't win the game this week, and, you know, you won, but you wouldn't have won if I'd been doing better.
I've played that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of dogs puking in shoes around here.
Yeah.
Their attitude is just miserable. And about 3 times of that, and I've had all I can stand. You know, I will, if that person sits down to a game, I've had it where I will just get up and leave. It's like, you know, I'm not going to play with you. I don't enjoy it. I don't have fun when you're playing. So if you want to play, great, go right ahead. I'm not going to.
Yeah. And another thing is, when you figure out those little intricacies of the game and you figure out the loopholes, when you turn them around on that person, oh boy, look out.
Yeah. Don't ever presume to do what they're doing. Goodness, no.
No, because then it's cheating.
Yes. It's the wrath of God Almighty himself delivered to you in small bite-sized packages. So, yeah, this person, the person with the poor attitude, just don't play with them. They're not going to change. It doesn't really, in my experience, it doesn't really matter what you say to them or how you say it or, you know, what kind of hint you try to give them as to how their behavior is detracting from the fun of the game. None of that matters. They don't listen. They don't take it personally. Oh, you're just jealous. You know, you're just upset because you didn't win, or you're just trying to gloat, or, you know, all this other stuff. And it's like, you know, I just want to play a good game with some good people, and you're not one of them. And I'm, you know, I've gotten tired of dealing with that. So perhaps either you or I should move on. And 9 times out of 10, it's easier if I just move on.
Yeah, well, my favorite one is, I think it was after I had left the store, but it was still open. You went down there and we're going to play a game of
Wings of War.
Wings of War, yes. And you were called out as being a not nice person.
Which is strange. Because literally what happened was this guy came into the store and he says, "Hey, anybody want to play Wings of War?" And I looked and I said, "Sure, I'll play Wings of War with you." He says, "No, I don't want to play with you. You're a dick." Now, keep in mind, in total, of the 6 or 7 times I'd seen this person, I'd said maybe 2 words to him that entire time. And I believe one of them was, "Hi, how you doing?" Which I guess is 4, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I hadn't played any games with him. As far as I know, he'd never watched me play any games with anybody else. Or anything like that. He just decided, apparently, that I was not worthy of, you know, playing. So, I didn't. I had a mighty good laugh, but I didn't play. And I'm, to this day, I don't know what his problem was. Except that the only thing I can figure is maybe he thought that I was somehow going to mess up his game, I guess. Or he wasn't going to be able to play or win or something. I don't know. I'm still puzzled, but whatever. That's attitude pregame. And so, yeah. Even had he relented after that, I probably still wouldn't have played because I don't need that kind of strife. Yeah. So, yeah, with your attitudinal player, basically, you don't play with them. You just make it known that you don't like the way they play and you don't appreciate what they do to the game, so you're not going to play with them.
Yeah, there was one player down there at the store that it got to the point where almost nobody would play against him because it was just, you know, it was no fun. There wasn't any point to it. And I think he finally learned his lesson for a little bit, and then, you know, there was a new influx of gamers that came in, and, you know, he's been beating them down, so.
Yeah, it's some kind of ego thing, I guess. It's just they have to insulate what little ego they have by inflating their victories and deflating their losses to somehow make them feel as if they have any self-worth at all. And that gets old in a hurry.
Yeah.
Our next one is the what we like to call the overly difficult player. And this takes a variety of forms. This is the guy who takes 15 to 20 minutes to plan their next move in checkers. Or maybe he's the guy who gets phone calls every 5 or 10 minutes in the middle of the game. And, you know, steps out and stops the game in order to take them and all that stuff. Maybe this is the guy who complains about whatever the food is for the day. Or the guy who has to make 15 or 20 trips to the bathroom every so often. You know, just kind of these little things that While they don't exactly screw up the game, they don't exactly make the game any better either. I've seen games that are supposed to play and have played in 30 to 45 minutes be stretched out to 2 or 3 hours with these kind of things. And there's, you know, admittedly, there's some things like, okay, maybe you're not feeling exactly up to par today and you need to visit that bathroom 15 or 16 different times. That's fine. I can understand that. But I think you should probably think about staying home if that's the problem right at the moment, you know? And maybe, okay, there's some sort of emergency going on in the background and you need to take some phone calls or that kind of thing. And that's fine, too. But, again, maybe you should stay home to deal with your emergency. You know, I can understand, you know, calling wives or girlfriends or whatever and saying, okay, honey, I'm still playing and it's going to be about another hour before I get home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Great. But you're here to play a game. You're not here to talk on the phone. I've had phone calls in the middle of the game before and that kind of stuff. And some of them can't be avoided. You know, it's like, you know, mom and dad are calling or the wife is calling or, you know, job is calling or something. And you've got, you know, you've got to take the phone call. That's great. But if you call up your buddy Frank from, you know, the middle of downtown who's having a party and, you know, you're talking, oh, yeah, hey, is Julie there? And, oh, hey, what kind of music you playing? And, oh, you had a lot of beer. Did you? Oh, hey, great. Yeah. That, you don't need to do that in the middle of the game. Hang up the phone.
I know him.
Yes. Yes. And along with this comes the guy who gets the phone call in the middle of the game and all of a sudden, oh, it's my best friend's birthday. I got to go. Really? Again? He's got 2 a week, does he? And it's like, priorities? I don't know what they are. Maybe you should have some. And I don't care which priority it is. You can go to the party if you want to, or you can come play the game, but please don't come play the game and then leave in the middle of it to go to the party.
Yeah.
That's tacky. And rude. And very unhelpful. And it's being overly difficult. The other one that I love is the guy who, oh, the game's at 5 o'clock. Hey, great, no problem, I'll be there on time. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Hey, you guys still playing? No. No. We quit an hour ago. Don't bother dropping by. We're done. The guy who can never be on time for the game. Now, I understand, yes, sometimes you work late. And, you know, we make allowances for real life stuff. You know, we understand it's a game. But we also understand that those of us who have taken the time to come to the game have done so at the expense of our free time. And that if the game is going to be delayed, and we're wasting free time by not actually playing the game because we're waiting for your dead ass to show up, then we're going to be a little miffed. Especially if we happen to have one gamer who saw you not more than 2 hours ago and reminded you that there was a game at 6 o'clock and you should maybe be there if you wanted to play. And you told him, oh yeah, no problem, I'll be there on time. Hey, great. Mm-hmm. Why is it 7:30? And you're not here. What is your problem? Either you're not committed to the game and you shouldn't be there, or you've got some serious scheduling issues that you need to look at and figure out. And again, you pull this person aside and say, look, you're screwing it up for us. I got 5 people here. It took me a month and a half to work out a day that we could play a game on at a time that we could play at and be free. And you, all of a sudden, for whatever reason, aren't capable of doing that. Perhaps you, all of a sudden, for no reason, should stop showing up. Or if you are going to show up, make a concerted effort to be here when you say you're going to be here. And I'm going to go into a more general comment on this, because it has come to my notice over the years that a majority of people are less and less interested in being places when they say they're going to be there than used to be. And I'm not talking just games. I'm talking like work. You know, I'm talking like family commitments and that kind of stuff. You know, if your schedule says you start at 8 o'clock in the morning, maybe, you know, walking in at 8:30 ain't the brightest thing in the world.
You're showing up to an interview late.
Yes, showing up to an interview late is always a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. if you have told somebody you will be there at a certain time, then they have made arrangements in their schedule, in their life, for you to be there. Maybe you should show up. Maybe if this is important to you, this is the kind of thing that you want to make some sort of extra commitment to make sure that the time is clear and that you're able to participate with your friends who have invited you over for what should presumably be a fun time. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, words to live by. Because I know a couple of our campaigns, it was nigh impossible to get anybody to show up at the same time every week.
Yeah. And we've had those things, and this is understandable. If you let people know ahead of time that this is what is going to happen, it's fine. But we've had those campaigns where different people, because of their rotating work schedules, are gone at different sessions. You know, and while that's kind of annoying, if you explain it, like I said, ahead of time, then it's okay. We can make arrangements for what to do with your character and what you're doing, and keep everybody involved in what's going on. You know, that's not such a big problem with board games, but with role-playing games, that can have a significant impact on what you can and can't do.
Well, yeah, and even if it's a last-minute thing, if, you know, life happens, if something comes up, you know, at least just give us a phone call and say, hey, I can't make it, I've got, you know, X, Y, and Z going on. If you just don't bother to show up and not call me, I'm going to kill your character.
Yeah. And then possibly you the next time I see you.
Yeah.
But yeah, and as a matter of courtesy, it's generally nice to give somebody at least a couple hours notice, if at all possible. I understand emergency situations happen. You don't always have that opportunity. But when it's an every time thing that you don't call and nobody knows what's going on with you and we can't get a hold of you and things aren't going the way they're supposed to be going, it's going to start pissing people off pretty short-like. So common courtesy would suggest that you at least, you know, like I said, about a couple hours ahead of time is what I consider, anyway, to be reasonable notice that you are not going to be able to attend. Our next wonderful little thing here. We're gonna call this the player with strange habits and interesting smells. Interesting smells. Yes. Not interesting in a good way, either.
Yeah, there's a few of those.
Yeah. First off, Gamer Nation, and I know most of you know this, and I know this is completely stereotypical, but I also know I keep running across it in various places where gamers gather in public. There's this invention out there, and I'm sure most of you have heard of this, but this invention is called soap. And it has kind of a companion invention that goes with it, and that's called deodorant. If, for some reason, you have been unable to apply either of these two inventions to your body in the last, say, hour and a half from your last strenuous physical activity, perhaps you ought to think about maybe, I don't know, using it? Going home and making some adjustments or something, please? Because as cliched as it is, it's a cliche for a reason. There are people who I have stood next to them and wanted to not be standing next to them almost immediately. Your body odor should not have a fifth player percentage. Okay? I know. This is so typical, so obvious, so cliched that it's almost become a joke within the gaming community. But would take a few minutes and consider the people around you, please. If you are a stinky individual, do not expect to be met with, you know, high fives, handshakes, and smiles all around the board when you show up, unless you have taken steps to remove that odor from your person. And face it, you're a gamer. Probably the most strenuous thing you've done in the last hour and a half was drive to the game store. Okay, and I don't know, it's like maybe 110 degrees outside, but I believe your car has air conditioning in most cases. If nothing else, it's got what we call 255 air conditioning, which is two windows down and 55 miles an hour. There's not really any reason for you to show up in a public place smelling as if you've just stepped out of a sewer. Okay, I'm sorry if that seems cruel and that seems unfair and all that stuff, but my nose has been treated to cruel and unfair treatment by some of you. And I have a rather prodigious proboscis. And so when it is offended, most of me is offended. So, you know, personal hygiene, please. Brush your teeth, comb your hair, get out of your sweaty clothes, get your... This is ridiculous. It's like I'm talking to a five-year-old, really.
Oh, I know. It's like dealing... It's almost like dealing with some of our clients, but it's you know, we're dealing with adults instead, and you still have to remind them.
Yes. 10 and 11-year-olds have difficulty finding the shower and getting in it and doing anything useful in there. All right? People in their 20s should know better. All right? You've been around people presumably long enough that the concept of personal hygiene should have entered your brain at some point and taken root and then been applied to yourself. And I'm not trying to be condescending or rude about it. I'm just telling you, come on. You're adults. Get with it. I can understand a stinky little kid, all right? But I can't understand a stinky full-grown adult. That may be just me personally. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. It is very cliche and it is very stereotypical, but it's there for a reason. More than one time, you know, there's been people that came into my store and other stores that I've frequented, and it's just, oh my gosh, you know, did you mess yourself before you came in here, or you know, need a ham of that? Because some of them are just ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm going to move on from this topic because I think we've hammered the point home enough.
We beat it into the ground.
In the category of strange habits, please, when you cough, cover your mouth, turn your head. I don't want to have my hair blown back from your explosive expectoration there. And chances are you'll probably blow some stuff off the game board, too, if you're really, and especially if you sneeze. Come on, people. The basic courtesy, and I don't know how people have missed this, but apparently there are those out there who have. If it's your intention to have a 3-liter bottle of soda immediately prior to or during the game, please do not feel the need to blow that burp across the game board. Okay? You're making yourself offensive. And okay, I am not the model. I'm not Miss Manners here, all right? But by God, I don't try to offend people when I'm playing a game with them. You know, because I operate under the presumption that I might like to come back and play with them again. Also, and this one's a little harsh. I will admit that this is a little harsh. But if you have a difficulty that requires you to perform certain behaviors, regardless of the appropriateness of these behaviors, for example, just to use the mildest one I can think of off the top of my head, if you really have to adjust yourself, I mean, really, can you maybe do that away from the table? Because I don't want to sit there and have to deal with you groping Mr. Johnson because he's out of the yard. Okay? just turn away. Go. And then you take that hand and you reach for the game pieces. And my mind screams out in terror at this point. Okay, go, you know. I don't know. I really don't know what it is with certain people. And you Gamer Nation, you might think we're joking and making this stuff up, but I got to tell you, I have seen it all multiple times from different people.
And heaven forbid you're playing a game with them. They want to shake hands afterwards.
Yeah. God. But there are other things. I mean, I've played with people, some kids especially, who are OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And they've got to arrange everything in a certain way on the board or in their player space or whatever. And that's fine. I can understand that. But keep your hands off mine. Mine doesn't need to be arranged the same way yours does. Yours is fine. Go for it. Arrange it whatever way you want to. You can stack up those little meeples into a circus pyramid if you want to. I don't care. But do not reach for my stuff and try to do it with mine. I'll get a little vicious about it. Okay? I mean, I'm all for, you know, an equal shot for everybody, and I'm not trying to be rude about this, but it is possible to exercise some level of control. I know this for a fact from my experience, but, you know, boundaries are nice. Don't stand right next to me, because I don't want your hand in my pocket. okay? Don't stand right next to me. Don't, you know, lean over into my play space and start fiddling with things and all kinds of junk. You would think that this would be just normal, everyday, you know, wake up, smell the coffee kind of behavior. But it's apparently anathema to anything anybody has ever thought about doing, because this happens all the time. I don't know why. And I, you know, like I said, I understand that you may have some actual difficulties that require you to behave in this way or make it very difficult for you not to behave in this way. But part of overcoming those difficulties or learning to deal with those difficulties is understanding that not everybody wants to partake of your difficulties. And that's just the way it is. That's, you know, kind of what we like to call life. I don't know. It seems to me, and there's a whole host of things we could talk about in this, you know, strange behaviors and interesting smells portion. But I really think that what it comes down to, and what all these come down to really, is the idea of common courtesy. Okay, it goes beyond just sportsmanship. It's really how you treat the people around you that suffers when these kinds of things happen. You are an individual, yes, that's great. You have your own likes, dislikes, and things you do and things you don't do, and your own limits and your own, you know, kind of standards by which you operate. And that's great. And I'm all for freedom of expression and the ability to do what you want to do when you want to do it and all that kind of stuff. And that's absolutely great, right up until the point when it begins to interfere with somebody else's enjoyment. And that's really what we're talking about here, is players who, because of their habits or the things that they do, mess up the enjoyment of the game for everybody else. And in general, the way you deal with all of this stuff is to start out by very politely taking the person aside and saying, look, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, or I don't know what you are hoping to accomplish by playing the way you're playing or anything like that, but this is a problem. This is why it's a problem. And could you do something about it? And like I said, you give them 3 shots. Because any reasonable person, if they're told something 3 times, then they better start taking it under consideration. If the problems persist, the difficulties persist, and people are still not having fun, then you cut them loose. Whether that means that you have to leave the group, or they have to leave the group, or whatever it takes. Because life is too short to continue doing something that is not making you happy. I'm here to play games. I'm here to play games because I enjoy playing games. I like interacting with the people who play games. And I like the camaraderie, the friendship, and all that kind of stuff. But if you're doing something that is interfering with my ability to enjoy that, I'm going to say something. And eventually, if I have to keep saying it, I will get tired of saying it, and then either I or you will go away. And that's about how simple it is. You can worry about being polite, and that's great. You can worry about hurting other people's feelings, and that's great. But if you're suffering because of somebody else, it's only fair to you and to them for you to say something about it and deal with the problem as it stands. Okay, don't try to make it a bigger problem. Don't try to minimize what's going on. Just make it very clear to that other person that there is a problem and that you would like it if they could somehow arrange to fix that problem. Any other closing thoughts, Andy?
Yeah, just, you know, like Brian was saying, it's common courtesy, just being polite in general. It really should be an obvious thing from day to day, but apparently there's quite a few people out there that don't pick up on it, but it's just, it'll make your gaming experience a lot more enjoyable if everybody's on the same page, if everybody knows what's expected of them and what, you know, what's going to occur, you know, when you get a game night together or you have a campaign going or something like that. Communicate with one another. That's the biggest thing.
On the table.
Well, aside from the silly nonsense from earlier in the week, Andy and I haven't got much on the table since, well, Thursday, which is our last show. But Andy did a couple of weird things, so he's going to tell us about those.
Weird. Strange, even. Mm-hmm. Well, last week I took several of my pre-played video games back to the game store to trade in for credit. And, of course, they were sold out of anything and everything that looked remotely interesting to me, so I figured I'd bite the bullet and pick up something that had kind of piqued my interest, the Halo Interactive Strategy Board Game.
I begin to fear things that merely pique your interest.
Well, yeah, and rightly so. Yeah, one of the things that I thought was interesting about it is it has a modular board game, so you can set it up in a variety of different ways. It also has some very nice game pieces. It's got little tokens and flags and things that you can use on it. You can play different kinds of games. You can play capture the flag. You can play elimination. However, as I started to read the rules, there were some old gaps in there, you might say. It's a board game based on a first-person shooter where, you know, you're running around and you're shooting and jumping and doing all kinds of things, but apparently in the board game you can either move or shoot, not both.
It seems somewhat less action-y than it should be.
Yeah, it does. And but the only way that you can move and attack somebody is if you move into melee range and then attack them.
Wait. First-person shooter and I can only move and attack in melee range.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are you seeing the problem? I'm
beginning to sense difficulties. Fun factor
and,
diminishing.
And the bad thing about that is if in shooting, if you shoot at somebody and you miss, well, you merely miss. If you move into melee range and you attack and fail, you die.
What?
Uh-huh.
Did I stab myself?
Apparently.
Well, I'm stupid.
Yeah, tripped on your own knife and voila.
I hate it when that happens.
It's terrible.
So if I throw a punch and I miss with a punch, I'm dead.
Yes, you remove that piece from the board.
Is there any explanation offered for this phenomena?
Apparently not. I haven't been able to come up with anything in the rule book, and all the reviews that I have read on the game have not been favorable. So, it's not like
the other guy gets an immediate opportunity attack or anything like that, is it?
If you lose, you lose. You're dead. Goodbye. Pack up your stuff and go home.
Wow.
But as I said, it's got a modular game board and nice pieces, so I'll be able to figure out something to use it for.
You know, if I take a pair of scissors to Monopoly, it's got a modular game board and some nice pieces.
This is true. We might have to do that.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to help, but okay.
But anyways, at some point that'll make it onto the table, and
the hell you say.
Well, maybe it will, maybe it won't. If not, I've got some cool little miniatures now from Halo, and I've got a modular game board. So.
And you've also you got something else with that too, didn't you?
Oh yeah. The whole interactive part of it. It comes with a DVD that you can put into your DVD player or your computer or whatever, and instead of rolling dice to tell the outcome of your combat, you can click on the DVD and let it know what unit you are, what unit you're attacking, how you're attacking it, and it randomly generates an outcome for you, and it gives you a little video display of this.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why don't I just throw the damn board away and play the DVD?
Well, you could do that. You could do that. But the board's kind of cool, so I'm going to use it for something else.
Okay, all right.
I'll use it in one of my other miniatures games or something, but, I'm just not... They didn't do very well with this one.
Yeah.
A little disappointed.
It seems to me, just thinking back a little bit, and I know I will offend some people with this, but it reminds me of the experience I had with Frag from Steve Jackson Games when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from the fact that I was charged upwards of $35, $40 for a giant box with very little in it, the other thing I found, because Frag is supposed to simulate the first-person shooter experience as well.
Right.
And the one thing I found that it was really lacking was an accurate simulation of the first-person shooter experience.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, this one apparently is just as lacking. Perhaps more so. I don't know if that's possible, but it might be.
Uh-huh.
But anyways, if you can pick it up cheap enough, hey, you got a cool game board and some neat Halo pieces. I don't know what you're going to do with it after that. Maybe use the cardboard to start a campfire or something.
Sounds good to me.
But yeah, the Halo Interactive Strategy board game.
Right. Okay, so you know what, Andy?
What's that?
I've discovered over the years that I kind of like zombies. In a, you know, in a strictly platonic way.
Okay.
Yeah, zombies. Mm-hmm. That's what I like. Have you done anything with zombies lately?
Well, zombies in a different sort of way. I picked up Resident Evil 5 here not too long ago.
Oh, my God.
And while the things that you're fighting aren't your stereotypical zombie, these are a little more intelligent. They're a little more ambulatory. These ones even pick up weapons and shoot back at you.
Wait a minute. What? They shoot back at me?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not zombie lore. Zombies don't shoot back. They shuffle around their brains.
Yeah, these don't even shuffle. Some of them ride motorcycles and drive trucks and try and run you over with
Holy
them.
Holy crap. That's awesome.
It is. It's a pretty cool game. It's very, very dark and gritty as to the way I guess you could say the way they filmed it. It's a very cinematic type of game. Very, very interesting. It doesn't have quite the same suspenseful feel that some of the other Resident Evil games have had. Because I can remember the first couple of games just scaring the crap out of me when a zombie would bust out of a window or something like that. But it still has that tension to it because you're not sure what's coming around the corner next. And there's been some really interesting bad guys that I've gone up against.
Yeah, you know what I remember from the first Resident Evil games? I remember bad camera angles. That's what I remember.
Yeah. This one's a little bit better, but it still could be cleaned up a little bit. My biggest gripe, and this has been something through the entire Resident Evil series, is when you bring your weapon up to shoot, you are riveted in place. You can't move. You can turn around, you can look up and down, but you can't move your character forward like you can in some other games. And it's not a first-person shooter. It's kind of a, I guess you'd call it a third-person over-the-shoulder view. It's a better view than most of the other Resident Evil games, but it's still kind of frustrating that I can't bring my weapon to the ready position and move to get up into a firing position or something like that. But it does have some really neat tricks and gizmos to it, and it's very, very well done.
Is this the one everybody's kind of been up in arms about because you're in Africa or something like that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's a new strain of something that they've come up with, and it basically takes over its human host, and you know, they're not really zombies. They're more of a mutation of something with a plant-like biological form to it. So it's pretty interesting. It's not your standard fare of zombies for sure, but it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, I don't want to dig too deep into the controversy and whatnot, but people are saying it's like discriminatory and all that other stuff, and you're right because nobody wants zombies. I don't care what color they are. Nobody wants zombies.
I don't know. I wouldn't call it discriminatory. It's just the progression of the storyline. At this point in the game, the Umbrella Corporation has kind of gone away. And there's a new company called Tricell that's running all these interesting experiments and stuff. Well, years and years ago, you know, Umbrella Corporation, you know, as far back as the late 60s is supposedly when the Umbrella Corporation came about, had started work in Africa in a region there and had discovered this plant and had worked on it for the longest time. Well, when Umbrella Corporation finally went away, Tricell came in, found all of their old research that they had done, and then capitalized on that and took it ahead even further.
Should I have a spoiler alert for this section?
It probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Too bad I don't have one.
Oh, well.
Guess what, Gamer Nation? We just ruined the game for you. Ha 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 ha. I don't know. I think I'm going to stick with House of the Dead.
Not bad. House of the Dead was okay.
It's got guns. Shooty bang 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 bang.
It does.
Shoot
this,
bang.
This has got quite a few guns in it too, and it's like I said, there's a lot of interesting things you can.
Yeah, but actual holding your hand guns.
I always wind up shooting the TV set. I don't know how you guys do that.
Yeah, because I use the ones that are wired to the machine, not the ones I get out of my closet.
Oh, is that what I'm doing wrong?
Yeah, you goose, you.
Oops.
Oh, here comes Gamer Nation, the dreaded end of the show. By my reckoning, it's a CL7 creature with stealth and a healthy dose of sneak attack. While Andy and I work out how to trick it into backstabbing itself, let's take care of a little business. Yeah.
That was good. We've started a poll up in our forums. We did a whole pole dancing. Excellent. We'd like
I do not want you in a G-string. No.
What?
No G-strings for you. None. No. Bad. Bad co-host. No biscuit.
Bad co-host. Anyway, we've started to pull up in the forums. We'd like you, the listeners of Game On, to head on over and tell us which segment of the show is your favorite, and most importantly, why. We're coming up on 20 episodes, and we might be due for some minor adjustments. Of course, out of line of sight of everybody.
That's right.
So tell us what you think, and lend a hand in shaping the show for the future.
Of course, now you've turned that whole lend a hand thing into some real creepiness there.
I really have.
you and your little ad-libs. Don't touch me there. Show us on the doll where they touched you.
Hey, Batman, stop.
Well, you guys started the thread, so this is all your fault. Check out the What's on Your Shelf thread on our forums and read up on what other members of Gamer Nation have available to them. Add your own list of games and, heck, comment on everyone else's stuff as well. There are lots of rare and hard-to-find gems sitting out there, and it's been really interesting to see what people have. In fact, that gives me an idea. Pending approval from Dave and Chris, why don't we start up a trade thread to move some of these old, unplayed, or disliked games onto people who would like them and play them? Let us check out the fine points and look for the thread in the near future.
You, sir, are a genius.
I know. That's why I have trouble finding hats. It's a huge frontal lobe. Massive. I tried to cut down an umbrella once, but it kept springing closed.
Giant cranium. Vader's son asked us about a game called Zagami from Looney Labs that uses the Ice House Pyramids. He wants to know how it compared to Primordial Soup, and the sad answer is, well, we don't know. We haven't played it. But Board Game Geek has it listed with a little over a 6-star rating out of 10. There's not a lot of info on it there, but I did notice at least one review and a few comments from people who've played it, so maybe they can give you an idea about it.
Yes, Game Nation. Don't always, you know, it's nice that you ask us all the time, but, I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of games out there, and we really haven't played anywhere near all of them. So don't be shy, you know, head over to Board Game Geek and check things out. Very simple game search feature. If you know the name of the game, you can find it that way and read a review from community-wide members. I mean, they've got thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of members, so there's almost as many members as there are games. And they're more than happy to tell you exactly what they think about a game and why they do or don't like it, and they have reviews and all kinds of postings on them and sometimes additional game bits that you can add to the game or unofficial variants or things like that to keep your collection fresh and exciting. Kind of like Andy. And that's at www.boardgamegeek.com. It's all free.
Free!
Remember, Gamer Nation, if you'd like to contact us and ask us questions we can't answer, or send in bumpers to increase your geek cred, you can email us at gameon@d20radio.com. Also, feel free to check out the new front page. Dave put a lot of work into it. You'll see show descriptions, host bios, links to the chat room, and streaming episodes of all our shows at www.d20radio.com. d20radio.com. There's always the forum link, too. Click it. It's full of awesome.
Full of awesome.
Yes, full of awesome. Awesome sauce.
Yes.
So until next time, Gamer Nation, game on.
Game on.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of soundsnap.com and freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
Let us check out the fine points. Well, there you go.
Uh huh.
Well, you guys, no, stop. Shut up. Trying to restart.